Jobs fill your pockets, but adventures fill your soul. Jamie Lynn.
When he asked around the campfire, I raised my hand as well as two other people. I said, dude, I'm in there like swimmer, dude, let's do this. And so he gave us a quick little lesson on the knots that we had to learn and the route that we were going to take and how to do it and how to prepare and what time we had to wake up. And so, yeah, we ended up doing that early in the morning, and there was three or four of us and went up, took our photos, had our experience. And that was, the adrenaline rush is pretty crazy with that, especially with the snow and ice, and the cables were down at this time of the year. This was early February. The cables weren't up. So we had to use our ice picks to chisel the wires out of the snow and ice. And so it was a lot of work to get up there.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the trail, Dirtbags and Hiker Trash. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. This week, we're going to spend some time in the American Southwest with fellow adventurer and photographer, Derek Ryan Mathewson. Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, Derek. How's it going?
Hey, man. Good to be here. Thank you so much for having me on, man.
Absolutely. Hey, what kind of day have you had today?
Woo. Where do I begin? Long story short, I mean, I'm on one of my photography travels. I'm out here in Moab, Utah. And I started my day by canyoneering out here in the medieval chamber out in Moab. So I was rappelling down a couple hundred feet with some friends of mine. So we were doing that to start the morning. And after we were done with that, I just got back from cliff jumping and hanging out at one of the secret waterfalls here in Moab. And we were probably out there for the last 3 hours and just got back to my truck to make it in time for the podcast. So here I am.
Well, fantastic. I appreciate you arranging to get back in time to have the interview. I'm a little jealous. My day was not as exciting. I had a couple of meetings and some difficult phone calls. And now here I am talking with Derek. So I appreciate it.
Right on, man.
Hey, how high was the cliff you were jumping off of?
Oh, it wasn't too bad. It's only about 15, 20 feet. Right now, the water levels are a little low. Mm-hmm. So we kind of had to jump from like a smaller or shorter terrain from the cliffs. But overall, yeah, it wasn't too bad. The water's pretty cold. So it's just melted ice from the mountains here. But yeah, I mean, with the weather conditions out here and how warm it is, it feels actually fantastic. It's a little breezy out. Last couple of days have been pretty windy, but still comfortable enough to where you're having a good time. It's not too cold, not really too hot. You're kind of like that right level. Plus, I needed to wash my dreadlocks today. So I was like, hey, let me go in the water and just wash these babies. But it's been a good day for sure.
Nice. Good. Yeah. With the water levels being low, you can't jump off that 100-foot cliff into 3 feet of water anymore. So it's makes it a little tough.
Yeah. You know, being 35 now, man, I'm not, 19, 20, 21, 22, like I was before. So there was some young teenagers here that were doing like double, triple flips. I was like, man, I remember those days, man. But yeah, you still have to kind of be careful because the water level is a bit low. So I was like, yeah, like I'll just stick to the 15, 20 footers, stick to what I know that's safe.
Now, if you are remembering with fondness the age of 19, I remember just as fondly the age of 35. So,
yeah, I just turned 35 about 2 months ago. So, I mean, hey, my 30s have been pretty good to me. So, no complaints.
Nice. And where are you? Where are we doing the interview? I mean, I have a good look there. Tell me where you're calling in from.
So I'm actually here in Moab, but I'm in the parking lot in my truck at the waterfall. I forget the name of the waterfall, honestly. It's kind of one of those secret little gems. My buddy that I was with, he's the one that brought me here. So he says, hey, I know this. I think it's called Milk Creek Falls, something like that. I think that's what it's called. And so we're hanging out. And I said, hey, I just got to make sure I be back in time And I think there's enough service in the parking lot where I can do the podcast. And so sure enough, I have four bars. And so they already took off. I told them I'll meet up with them at the campsite later, but I'm here in my truck. These are kind of like my curtains. That's like the window, obviously, but
nice.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just in my truck and Zach, perfect service. I think the lighting's okay from your end, right?
It is. You look great. You look great. You sound great. Service sounds great. So is it is it a build out? I mean, do you live in your van or in your truck?
So when I'm on the road, yes.
Uh-huh.
I renovated the interior of my truck to where when I'm on the road traveling, doing my landscape photography, travel blogging, this is my home on the road. So, I mean, you know, I have the basics being a solo traveler for the last 5 years now. I kind of know what I need and know what I don't. So I've become kind of a minimalist throughout the years. But I have custom made the interior. Do I have my curtains? I have my LED lights. I'm sitting in my bed right now. All my storage compartments, my electronics, toiletries, food, my acoustic guitar, and then my cargo box that's on the roof. It's my inflatable kayak, toolbox, backpacking stuff, canyoneering gear. And that's it, man. That's really all I need. Just that and the good vibes and good music, and I'm rolling.
The essentials. Maybe you can play something on the guitar for us a little bit later.
It's kind of out of tune, but we'll see.
Now, our listeners are in for a real treat tonight, because if you've been a longtime listener of the podcast, you know I like my stuff structured. I like to know what we're talking about in advance. I got it all planned out. We have some regular segments that we do, but tonight is going to be a bit unscripted. And when I say that, I mean, I still have my regular segments that I'm going to go through, but Derek purposefully did not read the outline ahead of time. He doesn't want to be... He doesn't want to be sound like it's scripted. He wants to be, you know, off the cuff and have it fresh. So
I'm not trying to give you guys any kind of scripted answers, man. Like what you get from me is like true from the heart and just, you know, just kind of how I like to roll, but a good 95% of the time. So
yes. And before we logged in here, I realized that we really never settled in on the discussion points of, you know, kind of Derek's adventures and stories that we're going to talk about. So I have no idea what's coming. So this is going to be an adventure on both sides of the mic tonight.
Yeah, man, I'm super stoked. So let's do it.
All right. Hey, Derek, in all your travels, have you ever picked up a trail name? Do they ever refer to you by anything other than Derek out there?
That's a good question. I'm going to have to answer and say no.
Okay.
I mean, some of my friends that have known me throughout the years call me Sparrow. Or just, you know, call me DHD, you know, Dreadhead Derek. Mm-hmm. But some of my friends that do call me Sparrows only because I've always been a Pirates of the Caribbean fan. I've always been a Jack Sparrow fan. Long story short, the last 7 Halloweens, I've dressed up as Jack Sparrow for Halloween. So
I can see it. I can see it. Yeah.
My truck is named after one of the ships in Pirates of the Caribbean called the Black Pearl, because I drive in an all black 2003 Z71 Chevy Tahoe, custom made license plate frame that says the Black Pearl. So yeah, you know, I mean, that kind of sits with me a little bit, but I have some friends, yeah, they call me Sparrow or just DHD or Derek. That's really about it.
Have you had a chance to listen to the podcast before?
You know what? I have not, man. And I apologize for that.
Oh, no apology necessary. I just want to make sure that you are aware of a segment that we do towards the end of the episode called the Pro Tip Insight of the Week. And that's where I will turn to you and I will ask you to share some trail wisdom or some adventure wisdom so that our listeners' next outdoor experience is even better. So don't be surprised when we get there.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
The must bring gear review.
Oh, that's Half Calf there telling us that it's time for the must bring gear review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company, Six Moon Designs. And here's how it works, Derek. If you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day hike, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So, Derek, what is your must-bring piece of gear out there?
I got an answer for you already.
Okay.
So my one piece of gear that I would have to bring, which is how I get into all of my shots that I take, is my tripod. The tripod, man. My tripod, I use a 6.5-foot tall Abbott tripod. Okay. And the tripod is what I use to not only take all my shots, but that is also the key in me getting into a lot of the shots that I take. And so long story short, my trademark in all my photographs that I take is I like to be in my photographs to use as depth and scale, especially if I'm in some super tall canyon and, you know, and I'm just a small little, like, you know, pinch little sized person in this 200, 300 foot tall canyon. People look at that like, oh my God, like, where is this? And who took this photo? And oh my gosh, like, you're so tiny, you're so far away. How'd you take this photo? And so, yeah, having the tripod is absolute key to have for sure.
Now, if you're going to appear like a very small human in this very large shot, how far away from the camera do you have to be?
I'm really not that far. It's all scale.
Okay.
And all, it's all angle. And that's what I love about landscape photography, because when you're looking at these photos, and a photo can say so much, it really can. And I have a lot of friends that live vicariously, and family that live vicariously through my photos and travels. And so when they see these pictures of me in these different locations, and particularly these spots where I'm just such a small little ant in this large domain or location, there's like, man, like, the scale of these shots are so amazing. It's just, how do you take it? And how far away? And like you just asked, like, how far away are you? And it's just all the angles. And so sometimes I can be maybe 50 feet away. Sometimes I'm over 200 feet away. It just really depends. But it doesn't really take me that long. So once I set up,
if you're going to take a shot that's 200 feet away from the camera, is the camera on a time delay, or do you have a remote in your hand? How does that work?
Nope. And so all of my shots are taken on my iPhone 11, but I use a long exposure camera app that I purchased and downloaded, and I use that for all my shots. And in the settings of that app, you can adjust what they call an intervalometer. In the intervalometer, you can adjust how many shots you want to be taken with how many seconds in between each photo will go by before the shot is taken. So today, you know, actually I didn't photograph anything today. Today was kind of just a day off, just fun and exploring. But yesterday when I was photographing Corona Arch here in Moab, I set up my intervalometer at 80 shots with 2 seconds in between each photo. And that's how I do. Once I set up my composition of what I want in my framing, then it's like, okay, I kind of figure out where I want my placement to be in the shot. And then from there, it's like, okay, and I just let it shoot, and it'll shoot, you know, 1 shot, 2 seconds go by, 2 shots, 2 seconds go by, 3 shots, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And so if it's still shooting by the time that I come back to the tripod, then I just turn it off. I'll look at the photo, see how they came out. And if I'm happy with how they came out, the lighting, the angles, then that's really about it. But if I feel like I don't like my placement, or the lighting's off, I want to adjust the composition, then I'll reshoot it. And I'll do that until I'm happy with the shot. So.
Wow, that's fantastic. And I've seen your shots on Instagram, and they are impressive. They're beautiful.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah.
And not one of them was taken with a DSLR camera.
That's what I was just going to say. If you had told me that this was all taken with an iPhone 11 with the use of an app and a intervalometer. Did I get that right? Intervalometer?
Intervalometer. Yeah.
Yes. I would have said that there's no way it has to be something different than that. But
well, the app is amazing too, though. And I'll give a shout out to the app too. And the app is just called Slow Shutter Cam. And I believe it's free now. I paid originally $5.99 for it originally. Mm-hmm. And I think it's free now. And I talked to the founder. I think his name is Daniel, I think. I talk to him like all the time, and we're working out some collaborations on some stuff that he plans on putting together. And I give all kinds of, I give a lot of shout outs about the sure. app all the time. So he's constantly getting like new downloaders all the time. So, but it's a great app. I mean, the settings in it are so different in comparison to if you're shooting with a phone. The settings are so different where you can adjust the light settings to low, medium, low light, the ISO time, the shutter time, again, the intervalometer. The settings are so different. You kind of have to play around with it to what meets your standards to what and how you prefer to photograph. So you'd have to toy around with it for a bit.
Hey, what do you think Ansel Adams would say to that whole setup?
It's a good
question. Would he be like, dang it, I carried, you know, 40 pounds of equipment with me through the mountains to get these pictures. I wish they had this back in my day. Or do you think he'd be like, I'm a purist. I need to have the big cameras and not use an app.
He'd probably most likely be a purist, where he's like, no, I'm going to stick to my camera. I don't care how much equipment I have to bring with me. I'm going raw. I'm sticking to what I know. And, you know, the way technology is nowadays, I mean, who knows what he'd really be saying. But for me, I've always kind of been like, less is more. So if I can use a phone that takes up maybe half the amount of space and get almost the same shots that a DSLR camera can shoot, I'm game all day, man.
Okay. And that's a good segue, talking about taking up space and how small things are.
It's the hiking pole.
We're going to talk about gear and equipment and your philosophy on excursions out there. I've got 7 questions for you. Call it the hiking pole. It's P-O-L-L, like a survey, not P-O-L-E, okay, like what you hold in your hand out there. And after asking these 7 questions, it's going to come up with I'm going to come up with a score. It's totally subjective, you know, on my interpretation of things. So don't be offended. Give you a score from 1 to 100, with 100 you're completely sane, and 1 you're completely bonkers. All right.
Okay.
You ready for this?
Okay. Let's do it.
Okay. Here we go.
Wait, 100 meaning what?
100 means you're totally sane.
Okay.
Yeah. And one being you're totally crazy.
Okay.
So do you do a lot of multi-day hikes out there?
Pretty much every day. Anytime I'm on my travels, I pretty much hike every single day.
Okay. For multiple days in a row? I mean, you're out there with a tent and stuff, or?
Yeah. I mean, if it's not just every day doing a new hike, then it's either maybe a couple day backpacking trip.
Okay.
One of the two.
Okay. Perfect. All right. So here's the first question. Easy one. Trekking poles or no trekking poles out there?
No trekking poles. I've never used a trekking pole in my life, to be honest with you.
And what is the barrier there? Why the resistance to trekking poles?
For me, I feel personally, I don't want to insult anybody.
No,
it holds me back. They get in the way for me.
Okay.
I've always been one that's been into outdoors. I've always enjoyed resistance training workouts, particularly leg workout days.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm hiking, I prefer to just have my hands free. That's just me. Mm-hmm. And just kind of move and get to that destination of where I'm headed. So I don't use trekking poles. No.
Okay. No trekking poles. Next question. What's on your feet? Boots or trail runners?
I use boots. Absolutely. Hiking boots.
Do you have a favorite brand?
I do. Right now, I currently own the Omni Heat. They're Gore-Tex hiking boots by Columbia.
Okay.
So those are the ones I'm currently using, and they're great boots. They're super lightweight. They're more designed for, I want to say, like winter, because they're Omni Heat. They're supposed to keep your feet insulated and warm. But to be completely honest with you, all the years I've had them for 3 years now. And so all the years that I've had them, I've never felt like my feet are like super hot like while I'm hiking. Cause I do use wool socks or just like comfort socks with like arch support, and whatnot. So I've never had a problem with them like overheating my feet, but yeah, they're super comfortable. They're affordable. Columbia does make some pretty good actually hiking boots. So those are the ones that I use. I do like ankle support as well. So the fact that they offer that, love them.
Okay. And no blisters?
No, okay. Never have gotten a blister.
Never.
Okay. Never. No.
You're one of the lucky few. No blisters out there. Nice. All right. Hey, when it comes to shelter out there on a multi-day excursion, what is your preferred shelter? Tent, tarp, hammock, bivy, or cowboy camping?
Ooh, that's a good question, because I do a mixture of cowboy camping, but I also will backpack my tent in. There's nothing like having a good shelter and just like a front door, which is obviously the entrance of the tent. So I would have to go with the tent if I had to. I have a 1-person lightweight tent, and it's by REI and works great for me.
Okay. Now, how about your sleep system? You prefer a sleeping bag or a quilt?
Sleeping bag. Yeah. When I'm backpacking, sleeping pad by Kyrie. That's the brand. And I think my sleeping bag is some off brand. It's some, honestly, I totally forgot the name of the brand, but I'm an ambassador for them. So they sent me the sleeping bag and it's been actually really, really nice. It's been really comfortable. It keeps me warm. It's four seasons. But when I'm traveling, at least sleeping in my truck, I have my bed in here and my sleeping bag and a couple blankets, and that's enough to keep me comfortable and warm. So,
okay. Next question. Big point deduction here if you answer the wrong way. So be careful. When it comes to food, are you a stove guy, cold soak, or stoveless?
I'm stoveless, man. I usually pack in a lot of fruits, nuts, seeds. I'm eating some almonds right now. I do a lot of pre-cooked, like organic chicken sausages, which I love because there's no cooking involved. So because they're pre-cooked, having like a 4 or 5 pack, if I'm backpacking or just like a day hike, just pack that into the backpack and just break the seal, have maybe 1 or 2 of those. I'm good to go, man. And that does it for me. Again, just with fruit, seeds, and it's really about it. I mean, okay. Pretty simple.
And is that because of the convenience of just, you know, reaching in and grabbing something to eat whenever you want without too much setup and preparation? Or is it a weight saving measure?
It's a good question because a lot of it has to do with me being a health nut. So I worked in, backtracking here a little bit, before I started my travels, I worked in a nutrition shop for 10 years on a Navy base in Port Hueneme, California. And so my health and wellness and desire to just live a healthy lifestyle, a healthy active lifestyle, a lot of that had to do with what I was not just doing in the gym, but also what I was eating in the kitchen. And so till this day, no matter where I go, a lot of the food that I have here in my truck, a lot of it's organic or fresh, locally raised like food. So I look at the sources of where a lot of the stuff that I'm eating came from. So when it comes to what I'm packing in my backpack or leader backpack, I try to make sure I pack food that's clean, but it's also going to give me the energy that I need at the same time. So that's why I say nuts and seeds, fruits. I do like uncured organic beef hot dogs, which are actually pretty clean. I don't do like no Oscar Mayer hot dogs, none of that stuff, man. So I'm pretty particular. I'm the worst to grocery shop with because I look at every ingredient that's on the label. So, but yeah, I try to focus on carbs, proteins, fats, anything that's a good source of energy and that's clean. So,
okay. Now this is not one of the 7 questions. This is a follow-up question to that one. What ingredient, if you see it on a package, what ingredient is a solid no-go? There's no way I'm buying that.
Soy protein isolate.
Oh, that you had that answer ready to go. Soy protein
isolate. That's just one of a couple of them. Yeah. I mean, soy protein, maltodextrin, MSG, hydrogenated fats. I mean, do you want me to go on? I mean, there's a lot of ingredients that I look for. If it has that, I'm out.
Oh man, I'm going to clean out the cupboard after this interview. Move it down. Got that pantry. All right. Hey, next question. Is life better above or below the tree line?
Ooh, it's a good question. Ooh, that is a tough one. I'm going to have to say above, man. I'm going to have to say above. I love looking at things from a different perspective. And I feel like when you look at things from above, you get an overall view of kind of what you're looking at, an overall scale. And so I would have to go with that. Okay. It can go, but it can go both ways though. But
you can make an argument either way, but
I would have to go with the from above if I had to choose.
Got it. Okay. Last question. What's more important, pack weight or luxury items?
Pack weight. For sure. Yeah. I'm one of those throughout the years, man. After doing solo traveling for 5.5 years now, like one thing that I've definitely found out about myself is I become a minimalist. And so I know what I need. I know what I don't. I'm a person that doesn't collect a lot of things, but I collect a lot of memories. And that's kind of prefer how I like to sit. Obviously not everybody else thinks the same, but for me, photography is a way for me to kind of capture my feelings, memories, emotions of where I was at that particular time and location, and being able to share that with other people has been awesome. I mean, I would have never have thought from where I'm at today that I would have the amount of followings and support from people, family, friends. It's been cool. So yeah, I'm not much of a person that collects things, just memories. And so memories is also just what you remember up here and what I'm shooting through the lens. So
that's right. That's right. That's a poetic way to put it. Collect memories, not things. Beautiful. All right. Hey, let me do some quick math here. I got to carry the 3. I'm going to divide by the square root of 5. Going to multiply that by pi. And we're going to adjust to factor in the air pressure from the top of Mount Whitney. And I come up with a solid 82. 82. You're not that crazy. You're not that crazy.
I don't think so. I'm pretty sane.
Pretty sane. You made some good arguments. Even when I didn't agree with you on some points, you had some solid backup as to why you did it that way. So nice.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Hey, before we get too far down the trail, let's back up a little bit. Love to hear your origin story. Talk about where you're from, where you grew up, what kinds of sports and hobbies did you play? Maybe when you were in high school, and then how'd you get involved in the outdoor adventure cult?
Yeah. So shoot, let's think, let's go back here. So I'm 35. Just turned 35 March 2nd. So I'm a Pisces and born and raised in Ventura County, California.
Ventura, not too far away from where I am.
No. And considering you're not that far, we'll definitely have to schedule a day where we can meet up in person for sure.
Absolutely.
Man.
Deal.
So we'll definitely plan that out. We'll talk about that more afterwards. But Okay. Yeah, from Ventura County, I go home all the time. I'm usually on the road weeks, maybe month and a half. Usually at most 2 months at a time. Then I go back and see my family, my brother, my sister, my brother's almost 1 year old son, my nephew. Mm-hmm. And so I hang out with them, and I work as a respite care provider. So I work for 2 different companies working with families that have kids with autism and disabilities. And then I also work as a contractor for Anytime Fitness Gym in Oxnard. And so when I'm back, I just hustle, try to get as many hours in as possible. I do a lot of under the table freelance work, whether it's photography or graphic design work, whether it's photography, graphic design work, and acrylic art painting. So I do like a lot of art paintings on t-shirts, leather jackets, Doc Martin boots, you name it. So I stay busy for sure. Whether I'm home or on the road.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's nice to have a lot of different hobbies and interests, man. I mean, I try to use my skill sets to make money and to get by. And so when I'm back home, that's kind of what I'm doing, and then build up that cash flow and then start planning that next road trip. So mm-hmm. when I head back, my next trip coming up is going to be out to the Pacific Northwest, NorCal, Oregon, Washington. How long I'll be out there, I don't know just yet. But yeah, I mean, and so...
And getting so into growing up in Ventura, did you go to Ventura High School?
No. So growing up, I actually grew up in Oxnard. I just tell people Ventura County. Right. It's easier.
That's right. Okay.
But I grew up in Oxnard, and I went to Rio Mesa High School.
Mm-hmm.
And then for college, I took a lot of college courses over at the junior college, Ventura College. And so I was going to school at the time for sports medicine, athletic training. And I had just finished all my general eds, all my prereqs, my internship hours there. And at that time, I was working in that nutrition shop on the Navy base in Hueneme, California. And at that time, I was actually talking to a chick that was a full-time traveler, also into hiking, photography. She made her money on her artwork. And so she sold a lot of that and made enough to get by. And so, you know, I was talking to her. We met up in person quite a few times. And she was a real big inspiration on what I'm doing today as a solo traveler. We don't talk anymore. That's another story. But at the same time, like, she was a big inspiration on my desire to hit the road. And I really didn't find that interest in photography until my second year of being on the road. My first year, it was just kind of point the camera, shoot, and just take off and move. Nowadays, fast forwarding, I spent a lot of time on angles, lighting, timing, and just making sure I really get like those key shots that really says a lot about that particular photograph. So that's kind of where I am today.
Okay. So it sounds like you're on a path. You're going to college. You were exploring sports medicine, and fast forward, here we are, right? 17 years later, 16 years later. Was it a light switch that flicked? Was it you talked to her and you made a split second? This is a change in direction. This is what I'm going to do. Or was it a kind of a gradual got used to talk to her and said, you know what, this might be the way to go. How did that all play out?
It's interesting because we met by accident on a dreadlock page on Instagram. She had dreadlocks too. And so when I was following her travels, seeing where she was at, what she was doing, we had met up for the first time in Valley of Fire State Park in Nevada, just 40 miles past Vegas. That's where we met up for the first time, got to know each other, hiked around, and there was something that kind of clicked between both of us. I'm like, okay, you know, she's cute, got a lot of the same similar interests. She felt the same. And she's like, hey, I'm going to be coming through the Santa Barbara area. It'd be cool to meet up again. I'm like, cool, let me know. We'll link up. I'll put aside the time. And so it was around that time when I really got to know a little bit more about her, and she filled me in about her lifestyle, how she made the money. And I was getting close to my 10-year anniversary working in that retail job on the base. And I was getting over the changes that were going on with the management, and they were actually taking away the nutrition shop. They said, hey, Derek, we're actually doing away with the shop. The sales aren't quite there. We're going to move you into a different department, in which I did move into that department for a while, but instantly knew it's not me. It's not me. And so right around that time, I was talking to her, my 10 years are coming up. And so I kind of made a decision like, hey, I have like a good comfort level here. It pays decent. It's a retail job, but pays decent and has good security here because my dad's retired Navy, you know, worked on that same base. So I was kind of like, oh, what do I do? What do I do? And I just told myself in my head, like, I'm not happy here. Two, I don't want to be that person that works to live. I want to live to, live to work. I want to be able to work to live. And so with what I was able to make there during the 10 years, I had set aside enough money to where I said, you know, I'm just going to take a break from school for a while, working. I'm going to just renovate my truck to do a temporary road trip. And that was really the start of everything, man. So that trip in 2017, where I was gone 6 months straight, that was the beginning of everything. Where I was like, dude, like I could see myself living this kind of lifestyle, and I can use my skill sets to make money, and I'm sure I'll figure it out. I got some sources. And as these years have gone on, I've definitely built up so many more collaborations, being an ambassador for different companies. Yeah, I'm trying to make it to that next step. It hasn't been easy as a photographer. I personally don't know anybody that's really made it or have made a lot of money as a photographer, but I'm positive I'll get there. So with where I'm at today, I'm pretty content with what I've been able to put together, and it's been fun, man.
Fantastic. Now, with your dad being retired Navy, sometimes folks in the military are pretty structured and have an idea of, you know, what the world should be like and what people's place in the world should be like. Was there any kind of pushback from the family when you decided to make this change and live this life of adventure?
There was, because like with you just stating, my dad comes from a different mindset, being he left his two younger brothers and his mom from Austin, Texas, when he was 16 or 17, and just knew that he didn't want to live there. And his dad had left the family when my dad was probably only like 4 years old. And my dad's the oldest of three. He just knew he didn't want to be in Austin, Texas. So he joined the service. And so him being into the service all these years and then now being retired, but still working on the military base, his mindset is different, how he sees and thinks about things. So when he looks at me, that I'm gone, but then it's like, when I come back into town, I'm ready for those questions. Like, so when are you going to, you know, get back to work again? And hey, what's the next step in your life? And, you know, he says in a nonchalant way to where he's not trying to come off like too aggressive, but I know where he's coming from because I know him. He's my dad. I know my dad. So I know what he's trying to get to, but I'm trying to just do it a different way. And I'm hoping that, you know, I can make it off the lifestyle that I'm living and off my skill set and talent. And I'm going to make him you know, just prove them wrong. So
now you mentioned brother and sister. Is it just one of each that you have?
I have a younger brother and a younger sister.
Oh, so you're the oldest. You're the oldest. What's the age gap?
I'm 35. Mm-hmm. My brother's 33.
Okay.
And my sister just turned 30.
Okay. And are they also involved in a life of adventure, or do they follow a more traditional path?
I think they live vicariously through a lot of my photos for sure. Yeah. But when I head back home, now that my brother's got a young son, he's pretty tied down. But it doesn't mean that he doesn't like the outdoors. I mean, he likes to go out and do family related things, kayak, hit the beach, go on fairly short hikes, but nothing intense like what I'm doing. And my sister, definitely, like, she's, me and her will go snowboarding. We've done a few backpacking trips. So she's all about it, but she's kind of tied into her work, single, no kids. So, I mean, she's got a little bit more time, but me and her definitely will connect a little bit more than me and my brother. He's tied down with a kid now. So.
Okay. All right. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about, well, I'm not sure what we're going to talk about. So you'll have to tune in and find out along with me what Derek has to share with us. Stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. Six Moon Designs has been innovating ultralight backpacking gear for the past 20 years. With a wide range of products ranging from ultralight shelters to backpacks and accessories like their extensive line of trekking umbrellas, Six Moon Designs is sure to have a great piece of gear for your needs. With the company philosophy being that gear should aid one's experience, not define it, Six Moon Designs thinks the more time people spend outside the natural world, the better off this world will be. And remember, go wild, live young.
And welcome back. We are talking to Derek from the back of his truck in a parking lot in Moab. And this next part's going to be exciting. So I've been wondering here how to get into this. And I think, you know, I know you're a photographer. I know you put a lot of time into getting the right shot. I guess my first question would be that what is the toughest spot you had to get to for a photo? What was the most challenging lead up to a great photo?
Man, that is a good question. Doing this for 5 years now, I kind of have to think about this. I think the first shot that, at least that comes to mind, that was really difficult to shoot was probably, it's going to catch you by surprise, but this is kind of the truth, was probably Multnomah Falls in Oregon. Only because all the shots that I had seen was a full shot of the upper and lower falls with nobody in the shot. Meaning, if you've ever seen a picture of that waterfall, there's a bridge that sits right in between the upper and lower falls. So it's the lower falls, bridge, upper falls. All the shots that I've seen of that have been super clean and of the upper and lower waterfalls. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting because when I got there and saw it for the first time in person, I was like, oh my gosh, this is freaking huge. The scale of it is really, really big. I don't know if you've had a chance to go to Multnomah Falls in the Columbia River Gorge. It's a beautiful waterfall, by the way. It's really beautiful. But what takes away from that, that feeling and scenery is the fact that they've kind of made it into a tourist trap. Like they have a little gift shop and they have like Multnomah Falls Cafe. It's right off the road. There's like no hiking. You park, walk, maybe not even 50 feet, and it's right there. And so from pictures, it's really hard to tell whether or not you really had to work to get there or what you're getting yourself into. So photographing that, I was like, holy crap, I don't have like a wide angle lens to shoot the whole thing. And so I was trying to figure out, okay, maybe if I step further back, I can capture it. And I kind of got to a shot where I was close to getting the whole entire thing. But at the same time, I also had to deal with people walking across that bridge. And so I'm like, oh, now I got to wait for that shot where there's like nobody on the bridge. And then to try to figure out how I can get myself in the shot, it was almost impossible because you had to hike up like this loop trail to get up to where the bridge is. Mm-hmm. And it actually never ended up happening. I was never able to even get myself in the photo because, well, considering the little like overlook areas that to set up the tripod and there's people like literally right behind me, it was a tough shot. I mean, I'm not going to go too much further, but that's a first location that comes to my mind that was really difficult to shoot based on photos I had seen. Like, oh, this really looks nice, super scenic. But the scale is you definitely have to use a wide angle lens. And because it's so popular, it's a tourist trap and it's right off the road. Mm-hmm. Makes it really, really difficult. So that's the first one that comes to mind, at least.
Okay. Now, interesting, with the iPhone 11, are there settings on the camera that allow for widescreen, or are there like attachments you can use on your iPhone to get that effect as well?
There are. So at that time, I was using the iPhone 8. Mm-hmm. So at that time, they didn't have that option.
Right.
It just had like the one camera lens. And so that's what I was using at the time. So I couldn't make that adjustment. And at that time as well, and this is going back to at least 5 years ago, this is like when I first started my travels, I had not known about the camera lens attachments. So I didn't use those. A little bit later on, I did find out that you can actually use these attachments for like macro or wide angle lens that you can put on. And I did use those for a short period of time. But you know what? I found that the quality of the shots weren't quite as good. So I stopped using those. They were really low quality shots. And so fast forwarding now, I have an iPhone 11. Yes, you can adjust your photos to that wide angle lens, which I'll tell you what, man, it makes a difference a night and day if you're trying to shoot something that's so large in scale and you're trying to shoot the whole thing. That wide angle lens gives you that option. And it's quite awesome, to be honest with you.
Game changer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And while we're on the subject of photography with an iPhone, do you have any tips? What's your best tip for shooting landscape with an iPhone?
Me personally, I prefer to shoot with lower light, particularly if I'm shooting anything that's long exposure. So I use the same app, the slow shutter cam, for all my shots. All my shots, 100% of them. So when I'm using the app, I do use my tripod because once I set up the composition of the location of where I'm at, then I try to figure out where in that composition I want to place myself. And most of the time they're natural. It's either just me walking or I'm sitting on a rock ledge or something like that, sitting on a log. More natural. But it's like when I'm trying to place myself, I try to make sure that, you know, I have my tripod, obviously use the slow shutter cam, set up my composition, and I prefer low lighting. So it's early morning, later evening, or even if it's in the middle of the day and it's overcast, or you got clouds in the sky to give that contrast and extra composition all day. That's more my preference for sure. I just feel like to try to force a shot on a day where it's super, super overexposed, no editing will fix a bad shot. That's just my rule of thumb. So I just stick to what I know, and low lighting is kind of where I'm at.
That's good to know. You know, I use an iPhone to take my shots as well, and my photos don't look like your photos. So I'm trying to soak it up here. Thanks.
Download that app, man.
That's as soon as we're done, that's what I'm doing. So thanks.
You have to toy around with the settings, but you'll get the hang of it.
Yep. All right. Hey, let's talk about your proudest accomplishments out there in the wild. Do you have some particular trips that are pretty memorable for you?
You know what I do? I do have quite a few, but I have, so on my cargo box, on my roof, my truck, where I keep all my backpacking gear, my inflatable kayak, my toolbox, my tire insulators, other miscellaneous things. Mm-hmm. On that cargo box, I have 3 decals that's on there. And one of my buddies, my buddy Joel was telling me right before, maybe 10 minutes before we started this podcast, he's like, yo, dude, you need more stickers on your, cargo box. I was like, nah, no, I don't. He's like, no, you do. I was like, nah, like those 3 decal stickers that are on there are like some of my proudest moments. So it's like, once I complete those few other ones that are out there, I have space reserved for those decals too. So I was like, oh, okay. And so those 3 decals that I have on there is actually one of them that says I hiked rim to rim the Grand Canyon in one day. I have another one that says I mountaineered up Half Dome, and it doesn't say much more than that, but I actually have mountaineered up that Half Dome with a few friends of mine in the winter. So we did it on snow and ice with our crampons and all that stuff. And the other one says I hiked Mount Whitney in one day. And those are the 3 that I have on there. So those are some of the proudest moments that I've accomplished, but there's so many others.
those are 3 pretty big feats, pretty big accomplishments. Of those 3, how would you rank those 3 in terms of difficulty?
Mount Whitney, number 1.
Okay.
Half Dome, number 2. And then Grand Canyon, number 3.
Wow. Rim to rim in one day is number 3.
I found it to be easy.
Okay.
To be honest with you, I think mountaineering or going up Half Dome was pretty difficult, particularly doing that in the winter was tough because I had no mountaineering skills. And I was with a group of friends of mine that all worked at REI. And every year we were doing an annual backpacking trip in Yosemite. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends brought a friend of his that came down from Washington. He was from Vietnam and was out here temporarily, but had done mountaineering lessons on the side to make a little cash. And so he had brought extra gear with him on that backpacking trip, asking people like, hey, I brought extra harnesses, carabiners, crampons. Who wants to climb Half Dome tomorrow? And we were only 2.5 miles from the base of Half Dome. We were at a campsite called Little Yosemite Campground.
Yep.
And so we were only about 2.5 miles away. And so when he asked around the campfire, I raised my hand as well as 2 other people. I said, dude, I'm in there like swimmer, dude, let's do this. And so he gave us a quick little lesson on the knots that we had to learn and the route that we were going to take and how to do it and how to prepare and what time we had to wake up. And so, yeah, we ended up doing that early in the morning, and there was 3 or 4 of us and went up, took our photos, had our experience. And that was, the adrenaline rush is pretty crazy with that, especially with the snow and ice, and the cables were down at this time of the year. This was early February. The cables weren't up. So we had to use our ice picks to chisel the wires out of the snow and ice. And so it was a lot of work to get up there. And just being up there and looking at Yosemite from that viewpoint was pretty damn amazing. So
that's fantastic. Now, you know, occasionally we will stumble upon the title of the episode as we're talking. And I think we just came to the title of this episode. You just said that you're in there like swimwear. That's the title. I can't do any better than that.
I say it all the time, man. I don't know. It's like one of my favorite little like mottos that I use.
In there like swimwear with Derek. Perfect. Done. Mic drop.
Love it.
All right. And let's go back to the Grand Canyon for a second. Have you heard of Buzz Burrell?
I'm not too familiar.
So Buzz Burrell is the popularizer. I called him the creator of the FKT, but he corrected me. He said, no, he's not the creator. He's just the popularizer of the FKT, fastest known time. And during our episode, we talked, and one of his adventures was doing the rim to rim to rim. And
oh, wow.
He actually created an alternate because there was too many people on the bridge that goes across the Colorado River. And so he and his buddy, they went a little further up and they did not use the bridge. They just swam across the Colorado River. So it was rim to rim to rim, swimming across the Colorado River.
Okay, that's pretty nuts. I mean, that river has got some force to it, so that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, he said it was definitely not swimming straight across. You would enter in at this point, and then you would end up, you know, downstream on the other side, quite a bit down. So,
wow.
All right,
that's crazy. I've never heard that before. That's the first time.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if that's allowed these days, but that was back in the day, and that's what they decided to do. So,
dang, man.
Okay, let's talk about Whitney. So you did that in one day. Did you start from Whitney Portal or did you start at the camp?
I did. So a friend of mine's, she had scored 4 permits for doing Mount Whitney. And she had asked me like last minute, I just got done backpacking at Havasu Falls in Arizona. Mm-hmm. So I just got done backpacking there and she had asked me, I said, well, I'm actually heading back to Oxnard right now. Like, what day are we talking about? It's like, oh, it's like in the next like 5-6 days, whatever amount of time it was. I'm like, oh man, like, I don't know if I'm prepared. I don't know if I have the gear. And so long story short, I ended up making it happen. My other buddy, Freddie, that I mountaineered Half Dome with, he was one of my buddies that also did that trip with me. And we ended up staying the night in town, woke up around maybe 11:30, drove up to Whitney Portal, and she only had a permit for a 1 day. So we didn't get acclimated. And that was probably one of the hardest parts for sure, because not getting acclimated and just starting right from the trailhead at that elevation, just working your way up. You say you've done it before, no?
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't done the 1 day. I've done it as the conclusion to the John Muir Trail a couple times.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so coming in from the other direction, but you've already been hiking at 10,000 feet for, you know, a couple weeks, so.
Yeah, that's something I've never done, the John Muir Trail, but that's kind of on the bucket list, but
I would,
that's kind of something I would more so prefer to do that with a person or two, not really solo, so. But we'll see. I mean, but yeah, getting up to the top, like we started at 8:20 in the morning. So take it back. We started at midnight. We got on the trail around midnight. We got to the summit of Mount Whitney around 8:20. And then me and my buddy, Freddie, we passed the 3 other friends that were with us in our group. As we're already heading down, they're still on their way up. And I said, you guys are close. Keep moving. You can't turn around now. We'll see you guys at the bottom. And so me and Freddie end up getting down to the bottom and we got to the bottom around like 2:15 or so. So that's about 14 hours.
That's pretty
straight up freaking hiking, bro. And we were so exhausted. The first thing we did, because a small little gift shop, like cafe, first thing we did was just get a 6-pack of beer and just some French fries and just carb the hell up.
That's but right.
My fingers, man, my fingers looked like Mickey Mouse fingers. They were so inflamed and poofy. I should have taken a picture of it, but I'll never forget it. It was so crazy.
Yeah, that hike is no joke for the, you know, the ascent up. I mean, right from the get-go, you're going up and you're going up the whole way. You hit the 99 switchbacks eventually, and then
yeah,
you know, it's straight up from there. And then coming down, that is my least favorite path in the world that I've hiked. There is not a clean footfall anywhere. You've got to watch every single footstep. And it's just a really difficult hike down.
From what I remember, yeah, it was. The only thing that was going through my mind was just, let's just get back to the portal. Let's just get back to the portal. I want to weigh my pack. I want to weigh myself. And so being able to do that in one day, I can say I've done it. It's off the list. I'm glad that my friend had hit me up about doing it, but I don't think I'll ever do it again. I'm not gonna lie.
All right. Now, did your friends that you passed on the way down, did they also succeed?
They did. After me and my buddy got back down to the portal around 2:15, 2:20 or so, they came down probably about 3 hours later.
Okay.
So we took a nap in the truck We said, all right, like we had her keys, and we had already planned that out ahead of time. Like, hey, just in case, if me and Freddie finish before, we're going to hold on to the keys. And she was okay with that. So yeah, we took a little power nap in the driver passenger seat, and yeah, they eventually came back down about 3 hours later. So
okay. Now, have you ever found your, not to say that these weren't tough, these are very difficult accomplishments. Have you ever found yourself facing some very difficult adversity out there? Has anything bad happened to you on the trail or elsewhere?
You know, that's a good question. And no, I've never broken a bone. I've never sprained an ankle. Mm-hmm. I've never really had anything severe like happen to my truck with me in the vehicle. But there was a point of time when I first started my travels in 2017. This is when I was on the road for about 6 months or so. And at this time, I was in Portland, Oregon, visiting a friend I hadn't seen since junior high. And I told her I was coming through town, and she said, hey, you know, come stay with me for a night or two. Let me introduce you to my fiance, yada, yada. And so I grabbed a few things from my truck, stayed the night in her apartment. My truck was probably parked about 50, 60, 70 feet away. They didn't have like a guest or visitor parking, so I just had to park along the side of the curb. And middle of the night, man, somebody broke into my truck, seeing that somebody was living in here. And they probably were just like, dude, we just hit the jackpot. And they stole my whole truck. So instead of just going through and taking what they wanted, they hotwired the truck, mountain bike on the back, cargo box on the roof, all my necessities inside the truck, and hotwired it and took the whole vehicle. And so obviously woke up the next morning, my truck's gone, did the police report. I was fortunate enough to have the police call me 5 days later and tell me, hey, Mr. Mathewson, we found your truck. Unfortunately, it's not in the same condition you last saw it in. So we had it towed to this location. You can pick it up here. So at that time, I was staying at another friend's house. He took me over to the address that was given to us. And yeah, I mean, I still had my keys. I had my phone, my wallet, clothes I was wearing, a few things here and there. But when I saw the truck, yeah, it was stripped. The windows were shattered. They had taken the California license plate off and put an Oregon license plate on. Bike was gone. They broke into the cargo box, and they drove it around for a good amount of time, because the last time I had the truck, it was on half a tank of gas. Mm-hmm. When I started up the truck, which I was fortunate enough that it started, it was on empty. They had left their receipts for fast food joints that they had went through, and they had left some of their clothing behind, their pack of cigarettes. And I do believe that they were going to come back, because the only thing they had left behind was just the driver's seat. So they had taken the back, because it's all leather seating in my truck. So they took the passenger seat, they took the stereo system, the back seating. So they were going to come back. And that driver's seat was only mounted in by one of the four bolts. So they were going to come back. So I was fortunate enough, yeah, again, that the police had found it. And then I just went to like a strip, what do you call those little lots, where it's like a pick your parts. You just go to like one of those lots and pick a part off another vehicle. I was extremely fortunate to find some of the parts that I needed off like another Chevy vehicle. So that's what I did, man. And my friend convinced me to do the whole GoFundMe. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. Like, I'm not trying to get pity off people. I'll figure this out. And she actually made the account for me. And on within 2 weeks, I was able to raise $3,600. And all that went just straight into repairing the vehicle, fixing the windows. So all the windows were shattered. So, So yeah, that's that story on that. And that happened in 2017, which was the first year of my travels.
Wow. What a violation. That story started off and went south really quick. But you picked us back up again with that story about the GoFundMe page and people coming in and helping you out in that way. So
people, I don't even know, bro. Like, yeah, I didn't even have a whole lot of family members like donate to help me out. It was all strictly friends and just Instagram followers, mainly, like 90%, which was unbelievable.
this thing happens to you. It's a violation of the highest magnitude. And you think to yourself, man, people are just terrible. They're just terrible. Who would do this? And then the other people come through and pick you up through the GoFundMe, and you know, you reevaluate and you say, you know what? Most people are generally good.
A good majority, yes. Mm-hmm. The good majority of people that I come across, and I think it has just a lot to do with my vibes and how I release that to other people. It's just, I try to give more than what I receive. And so I think having working retail for over like 10 years just has a lot to do with how I work and connect and communicate with people of all ages. Mm-hmm. I mean, even being able to have... just having the patience to work with kids with disabilities and autism, like you mm-hmm. really have to have like a good personality to do that kind of stuff. And just Absolutely. Patience overall, patience is really the only word that comes to mind. So yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, things always come around. So for those people that did that stuff, I mean, their time will come. Right now I'm still living the life. I'm fortunate for what I have and what's been given to me. So mm-hmm. I'm always thankful for that every day.
Yeah. And if you're listening to this instead of watching this on YouTube, I encourage you when the episode is over to watch it again on YouTube. And you can see that we started out in bright daylight. He had the curtains pulled, and slowly as the episode has continued here, the light has gotten darker and darker until that clicking you heard in the background, it was him pushing on some interior lights.
Yeah. It's just my interior lights in my truck. So I can see from the cam that's getting dark, and it is what, 8 o'clock here now?
Yeah.
So yep. It is getting darker.
Okay. Hey, Derek, what's next for Dreadhead Derek?
So for me, one of my goals is to visit every national park in the lower 48. So that's obviously not counting Alaska or Hawaii. My goal is get to every national park. So one conversation starter with me is on my day pack, I have a patch of every national park that I've been to. And so on my day pack, I have 35 national parks, patches on there. Wow. And so it's instantly always a conversation. Besides my dreadlocks, my patches on my backpack are always a conversation starter. So one of my goals is to get to every national park in the lower 48. So I've been to 35 out of the 51. So I got another 16 more to go or so.
Okay. And do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite so far that you visited of the 35?
You know, I get that question all the time, and I'm going to give you the same answer that I give to everybody else. I don't have a favorite national park, but I can give you a top five.
Okay.
So I've been fortunate to visit all of them. Well, at least the 35 that I've been to, but the five that are in my top five favorite list is going to be Yosemite.
Okay.
In NorCal, mm-hmm. Glacier National Park, and that's in Montana. Mm-hmm. Canyonlands here in Moab, Utah. Death Valley in Central California. This is going to catch a lot of people by surprise, but drumroll, Big Bend National Park in Texas.
Okay. You know, we have talked about each of those on the podcast, and the first four I kind of expected. Those are very, very common answers, but Big Bend, that's one I had not heard of until a few episodes back. And so
it's an underrated park, man. It's a really underrated park. It's really out there. Like, you have to drive a good distance to get to it. And I don't know a lot of people that travel to Texas to begin with on vacation. Mm-hmm. So let's just start there, and then to drive all the way south to the Texas-Mexico border, which is where it sits. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of cool stuff there with just dinosaur track history. You have like the whole canyon that you can actually swim in. If you swim in that water, you're technically right on the border between Texas and Mexico. So actually, I did that. I drove from one canyon wall to the other side, and I said, hey, like, I'm in Mexico now, you know, so I joked around and told people I went to Mexico on this trip. There's some other just cool scenic stuff. There's a lot of cool hikes and hidden gems in that park that the national park rangers don't tell you about. So you have to put in that research to find some of these spots, which is what I love about a lot of the stuff that I prefer to shoot, putting in that little extra work with research, driving and hiking and then getting there and hopefully having that whole spot all to yourself. So Yeah, it's a great park, and it's a fairly large park too. So,
okay. And of the 16 that you have not visited yet, which one are you looking forward to the most?
Probably Acadia National Park in Maine. I keep hearing a lot of great things about that park. I still have not been there yet. I actually came across somebody, I think a day or two ago, that lives out in Maine that says, oh, have you, they'd seen obviously all the patches on my backpack. So they'd ask like, oh, have you been to Acadia? I don't see the patch on your backpack. I'm like, no, I have not been there yet. And this person just went off on all the time of year, the scenery, all the different exhibits, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, I know. Like, it's just a matter of getting out there. It's a little far from where I'm at. So it's like, it's a long drive. It's a long flight, however the hell I get out there. But
right.
I told him I'll get out there eventually. Except if I want to get that patch, I'll have to make my way out there. So.
All right. Hey, Derek, you know where we are?
I don't.
The pro tip insight of the week.
Half Calf tells us it's time for the pro tip insight of the week, that time of the episode where I turn to you and ask you to share some trail wisdom or some adventure wisdom for our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better. What do you have for us?
Well, you know, man, the one thing that I always tell people is definitely just kind of live in the moment, man. Like, try to put away the electronics, put away the phone. And this is coming from somebody that uses a phone for their photography. But I try not to let my phone overwhelm me, in a sense to where, yes, we use our phones for everything. And yes, I use my phone for photography, but I kind of know when to use that in moderation. So when I'm out in the trails, I put my phone on airplane mode, get my shots. And I try to just live in that moment where it's like, I'm really just appreciating where I'm at, what I'm doing, what I've been capable of, and just, being fortunate to even being able to do what I'm doing. And so with that, it's like not just living in the moment, but even though we may be out hiking or backpacking, canyoneering, mountaineering, snowboarding, whatever the heck you're doing, and you may not have that service, you're always guaranteed to have that better connection with nature or with people. And so I tell people that all the time, man. It's just building that connection with whatever you're doing in that moment of time with people, on the trail, the scenery you're looking at. Don't feel like you constantly have to post like ASAP for social media. I probably post maybe once, maybe twice a week, but I post it on whenever I get around to having that time or service, you know. But, you know, you only live once, man, but if you do it right, once is enough. So live it up, have a good time, meet new people, be open-minded. I mean, my rule of thumb is I just try to give everything at least two chances. You know, I mean, sometimes if you don't like it for the first time, there's a good possibility that it didn't quite play out, you know, the way you wanted to. But if you give it a second chance, then usually it ends up working out for you. But yeah, man, it's just one of those things where I try to just be very appreciative of kind of where I'm at, what I'm doing, who I am as a person. And again, being able to do what I'm doing and being able to build this following throughout the years and people living vicariously through my photos and showing even like, hey, you kind of don't need to have $400, $500, $600 camera gear and equipment to get a lot of these shots. You do just have to put in the effort to get a shot that, you know, is actually, oh shoot, hold on a second. Oh, there it goes. Get a shot that actually is like, yeah, the light will go off every once in a while on here because my truck's not on. So, anywho, yeah. Just putting in that extra effort to get that shot with the good lighting, you could do it with the phone as well. But for the most part.
That felt like three or four pro tips. That was excellent, Derek. I really appreciate that.
Oh, thanks, man.
Okay, so there you go.
I was happy to share. I mean, those are just like a couple of things that like first came to mind, but it's just kind of how I think and what I tell people all the time. It's not living carefully. It's living cleverly, man. So, and I heard that from a guy about 5 or 6 years ago.
These nuggets of wisdom just falling from your lips there. You're full of them. In there like,
well, swimmer. I mean, I meet a lot of people. And so these things like... Yeah. They stick with me. And I met this guy on a trail. I forget where the heck the trail was at. And we were talking, he saw my patches and he's like, hey, you know, you seem like a young, wise kid. He's like, you know, if I have a daughter, you know, I would love to introduce you to her, but he's like, but I've got all boys. And he's like, but you know, just being a solo traveler, he's like, just be careful out there because there's a lot of people that'll take advantage of you. There's a lot of bad people. And he's like, you know, if you're just living as a minimalist on the road, he's like, the best advice that I can give you, and I'll never forget this, bro. This has stuck with me ever since. He was just like, living as a minimalist, as a nomad wanderlust, he's like, just make sure you live cleverly, not carefully, because if you live too carefully, like you tend to overthink things. So if you live, you know, if you kind of live your life that way, it's like you'll definitely find ways to kind of get by. So think clever, not careful.
Might be the episode title right there. That's pretty good too. I like that. All right. So that's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Derek. Want to thank him for joining us this week. Derek, how can our listeners keep up with you on social media and where can they find updates on your latest adventures?
Yeah. So everybody that was listening, I thank you guys for taking the time. I was happy to do this. I'm going to go back to campsite, hang out with my buddies, probably have a cold one or two, set the campfire. But you guys can pretty much find me on Instagram. That's more so where I tend to post a lot of my stuff. When I have service, I probably post around maybe once, twice a week, but you can find me under dreadhead_Derek, D-E-R-E-K. And on there, you can also find the link on my page to either my podcast or, like I said, about every month or so, I rotate them out to my travel blogs because I write for a company called The Outbound. So I do my travel blogs through them. So either or, one of the two links will be up there to either my blogs or podcast under dreadhead_Derek. And that's where you can find me. I appreciate everybody's support. And thank you again so much for having me on, man. It's been fun.
Absolutely. Hey, remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We're on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you have comments or clips you want to share, you can send it to me at johnfreakingmuir@gmail.com.
The Adventure Media Recommendation.
Okay, Derek, I'm also looking to you to share a recommendation for a book, a movie, documentary, website that's going to help keep our listeners connected to outdoor adventures. We're calling this our Adventure Media Recommendation. What do you have for us?
Well, I guess one of my recommendations would be to check out the company that I write for called The Outbound. I do, like I said, travel blog and write for them. So it's a free app. It's very similar to All Trails, where you can look up different hikes within the general area, description with like the distance, elevation, the height, pictures. I think it's at a better quality when it comes to the writing scale and the photography. And that's why they had reached out to me on being not really an ambassador, but just being affiliated, working with them as a blogger, because they said, we really like your writing content and your photography. And would you be interested? Yada, yada. And I said, yeah, for sure. You know? And so I think their standards are a little bit higher, but I would check them out. I would definitely look up The Outbound app. And when it comes to movies, I don't know if I really have one. I mean, I really can't think of one off the top of my head, but
that's okay. We can just stick with the app. That's fine.
That's the person that comes to mind. I'm not like a big movie watcher. I don't really have a lot of time when I'm here in my truck or on my travels. And when it comes to books and magazines, yeah, I really can't even think of one either. So
okay, no problem. I was only looking for one, not one of each. So you're off the hook there.
Oh, okay, sweet.
Yeah.
What have we not asked you?
Oh, there she is again. Hey, before we wrap things up, I've got one more segment for you called What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About? What did we miss?
All right. This is going to really freaking throw you guys off guard. I was waiting for this too. This is one thing nobody knows about me that I kind of keep on the DL.
Oh, wow. Okay. This is like a John Freaking Muirpod exclusive right here.
It kind of is, man.
Okay.
And if people, once I give you the slight description, then I'll give you guys the link to my other Instagram account where people can look at what I'm about to tell you now. But one thing that a lot of people don't know about me is I'm a super diehard LA Lakers fan. Big time. And so they also know me as the Lakers Sparrow. So during the Lakers season, I dress up in like a Jack Sparrow, like Laker fan getup, going to Laker games, going to Laker signing events, anything Lakers related. I do a lot of Laker games on the road. So one of my goals is to visit every Laker game, or sorry, every NBA arena with the Lakers playing that team. And so I've been to 23 out of the 30 arenas. So I still have Wow. seven more arenas to go. So I go and watch my Lakers play in every NBA arena. Been to Boston, been to Madison Square Garden.
Oh, wow.
You name
That's
it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's
and
awesome.
So with that, I have a huge Lakers memorabilia collection. I've been collecting for over 23 years. I never talk about it. Never talk about it. But it's kind of something, if you know me personally,
uh-huh.
it's one thing you'll know, like, okay, like Derek, yeah, loves the outdoors, loves nature, he loves photography, but this dude's like a fanatic Laker fan. Win or lose, I'm there supporting. My keychain has like a little Lakers medallion on it. But yeah, my Instagram page is just Laker_Sparrow. Laker_Sparrow. You can find me there. You'll see my dedication to my memorabilia and collection there. And so let that just catch you off guard.
Nice. Since you shared that, I feel like we're friends now, that, you know, we got close enough that you were able to open up and share that with us. Thank you.
Purple and gold all day.
That's right. And you know, I'm a big Laker fan as well. It was a tough season this season, but
it was horrible. We'll be back.
Brighter days ahead. Back. Yep. That's right. That's
absolutely
right. Okay. That's a wrap from the John Freaking Muir studio. Any shout outs to friends and family, Derek?
Yeah. Hey, I just want to give a shout out to everybody that was listening. Thank you so much again for having me on. It was a lot of fun. Big thanks to all the companies I'm an ambassador for. It's been an honor representing you guys, but hope to definitely meet up with you in person, man. And yeah, no, we'll get together. This was a lot of fun. So again, the questions were not prepped in my mind, so I didn't want it to seem scripted by any means. So it was just all raw, right from the heart, man. So thank you again.
You were totally fresh. Totally fresh. All right.
Much
hey, thank
love,
you for
man.
Tuning in. And always remember, the trail is the trail. It doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if the cables are down and you've got to use your ice axe. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.